Without people, riches is just another store full of merchandise. Without people, our policies are just so many theories. It takes people to give them meaning. Riches is a personal store.
It was the institution of Atlanta. I remember the Christmas tree on top of the bridge. I remember going there to see Santa Claus, taking my younger sister there to see Santa Claus.
I remember going there on numerous occasions just to sort of stroll through and look at what they had. It was the kind of place that you would go just to see. It enjoyed a wonderful relationship with all of its customers, black and white, but it had segregated lunch counters. It had no black people in executive positions or sales positions. All of the black people who worked there were in menial positions. So despite its good customer relations, it was no different from the meanest store in Atlanta. But because it was the leader, it was the natural target. My name is Julian Bond. In 1960, when the sit-ins began, I was 20 years old, and I was a student at Morehouse College in Atlanta.
By the summer of 1960, hundreds of students from Atlanta's African American universities had been demonstrating at downtown businesses for months. They were spurred on by a group of students in Greensboro, North Carolina.
When we read about it in the newspapers, it was almost like reading an instructional manual, How to Sit In. It told how they dressed, it told how they acted, and we immediately said, hey, we can do that.
We also had something else. We had 1.1 million African-American men and women who had been in the war, World War II, and also in the Korean War. And they had seen the opportunity to operate in a desegregated army. So many of them now were back in the South, because that's where many of them came from. Well, guess where their kids were going to school? Their kids were going to school at these black colleges. So therefore, I think you had an accident of history in a way. All these ingredients coming together to form this critical mass. Educated population, more better educated, and also people who have been fighting with guns who had kids who were in school.
My name is Lonnie C. King, Jr., and at the time of the sit-in at Richards, I was a senior at Morehouse College, majoring in economics and minoring in business administration.
So Richards became our crown jewel, really, in our protest demonstration to desegregate places of public accommodation. My name is Charles Black. I was a student at Morehouse College, and at the time of the sit-ins, when I was first arrested, I was 19. Richards had the reputation of living up to their proclaimed motto of no sale is complete until the customer is satisfied. They were, you know, Atlanta's leading establishment.
You could break the little places, that's fine. But if you didn't break Richards, Ivan Allen and none of the other big businessmen would take note.
At the time of the sit-in, my name was Lydia Tucker. And let's see, I was 20, 21. And at that time, I was a student at Clark College.
In the fall of 1960, the sit-ins and picketing of Atlanta's leading department store began in earnest as African-American students focused on Rich's lunch counter.
Of course, when they saw us coming, the line front employees yelled back to the bar, here they come, here they come. And right away they would come out, now you need to leave, you know you have no business here. Of course, they would never serve us.
I think the younger the blacks were, the more they were with us. The older blacks were scared to death, in my view. They thought that we were going to get killed, and maybe they might get killed too. And there was nothing wrong with that view, because it was a very realistic view based on the history in the South. Whenever a black person had raised his or her head, it was cut off.
One incident I do remember, one of the waitresses threw a can at one of the girls sitting in with us, Ruby Doris Smith. Fortunately, Ruby Doris ducked, and it did not actually hit her.
Some folk had cigarettes put out on their arms or hands and had coffee spill on them or spat upon, but nothing like what happened in Birmingham. But you never knew what to expect. We were putting ourselves out there with no plan of defense.
There is something powerful about an image. If you have the symbol of power, the police chief or the police, with dogs and billy clubs and fire and hoses, all focused on these kids who are dressed well, all they're asking for is fairness, a lunch counter sandwich. And you have all this power. It's almost like sending an elephant to swat a gnat.
One day we were picketing Rich's department store, and the police picked up the leaders of the Atlanta student movement, Lonnie King and others, and took them to the police station.
So when I got there, in walks Mr. Richard Rich, who is the president of Rich's. And he comes in and he points his finger at me and he tells me, if you bring your behind down to my store again, I am going to have you arrested and put in jail. And I said to Mr. Richards, well, then that's going to happen because I will be back.
And that just reinforced our determination to make this painful, for, not just for him, but for all of the other people, to heighten the boycott of downtown stores we were running, which eventually proved really, really effective. And I'm sure hurt their bottom line and the bottom line of all of the other stores down there, too. I'm sure he regretted it. I knew him to be a decent, decent man who sincerely felt strongly about these issues and that what his store and other stores were doing was wrong, but who felt caught between this considerable group of anti-Semites and racists in Atlanta and the legitimate demands of his black customers.